Jenna and Carol on K104. It's Happy Hour.
Welcome to Happy Hour with lawyer and TV personality Jonna Spilbor and author and inspirational speaker Carol Pesci. Happy Hour comes your way every Sunday morning at this time with life advice, real conversations, and awesome interviews with self-help heavy hitters, best-selling authors, celebrities, and more. Would you like to maybe live better, stress less, and laugh more? Then you've come to the right place.
Good morning and welcome back to Happy Hour. Here it is Jonna Spilbor, it is Carol Pesci, it is Frankenberry. Last week I was that Frankenberry fella, this week I'm just regular old Frankenberry. And eventually we'll have a very cool guest that we're going to be talking to today to talk about burnout. And I'm sure there's plenty of you out there in the listening who suddenly perked up and went, what? You're going to talk about burnout? Okay, all right, we'll
hang around. Nobody deals with that.
That's right. Yes, yes. We could use a few tips, if possible. And her name is Emily Ballesteros.
Yes, you guys. I am very excited to be talking with Emily Ballesteros because she wrote a book that literally just came out entitled, aptly, The Cure for Burnout. And it excites me. I got to tell you, I'm midway through the book, and I'll tell her this when we talk to her, and I honestly feel like she needs to get out of my head. And it really is a helpful, and I know that we've had a few guests in the not too distant past who have touched on the issues of burnout, and maybe I gravitate toward that topic because for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
But it really is. You can never know too much about it. Like, some books are going to resonate with you more than others, and hers is really resonating with me. And if you are suffering from any sort of what you might not even know it's burnout. You might think it's something else, but we'll go through that. You're going to want to stay tuned for our next segment with Emily Ballesteros.
All right. That sounds good. That sounds good. So now, Johnny, you are calling yourself today. Your latest alias in our Zoom session is Burnout Babe. Now, is that in honor of Emily, or are you actually feeling a Jonna burnout at the moment? Well,
that is an homage to
homage. God.
To our upcoming guest, and not something else. Like, remember back in the day, when we were younger, burnout to me was something that we referred to as the potheads in school. Remember?
That's right.
It wasn't a state of being where you were just tired and life was, you know, taking its toll.
It was an identity.
Yes, exactly. It was the kids in the smoking area that you stayed away from.
Yeah, ruffians. You know, the kids who skipped school and did all that stuff. Back when recreational marijuana was not legal, it is legal now. And just a little sidebar, so now that you're going to make me go off on a tangent I wasn't really intending, but have any of you been to Manhattan lately?
Nope.
No.
Well, I'm there now regularly once again, and I got to tell you, what is striking is every other business on the route where I'm at in Midtown is a pot shop. And they're not even, so here's what's bugging me about it. Like, okay, whatever, recreational marijuana, if you want to do it, that's fine. I don't partake. I never did. I'm not judging people who do. But those pot shops, they look really, really cheap and cheesy. Like,
I would imagine they also look very sketchy.
It's so hard to explain. Like, you got to see them. And I think that they should make a law, right? If you're going to have a storefront that sells marijuana, that it can't look like, it has to be classy. Like, you have to take a page out of Fifth Avenue. You got to decorate your windows like, you know, your Louis Vuitton or Prada or something. Like, have some nice, very, I don't know, make clothing that looks like giant marijuana leaves with these beautiful models, and they have to stand there all day. Just make it interesting.
Jonna, you are on to million-dollar idea number 843.
Yeah, there you go.
Open up a high-end pot shop.
That's right, where you're selling hemp clothing and hemp jewelry.
Ooh.
You know,
so glitzy, chandeliers, white glove service.
Yes.
There you go.
This lowbrow stuff.
That's right. Well, keep in mind, too, Jonna, that I guarantee you probably 75% of those stores are going to be gone in a few months.
Well, because 75% of those stores are illegal, by the way. There's a lot of them
probably are. Are any of them called Spirit of Marijuana, by the way? You know, like a pop-up?
I don't know. I will take note when I am there next. And that's, you know, that's another thing. Like, how can you tell whether one of those places is legit or not? Because that could be a little scary, you know?
Well, I think when you walk in the front door and everybody suddenly stops, looks at you and points a gun at you, you probably know you can walk out.
Right. If you walk in dressed like a cop.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I'm going to do that. I'm going to do that just for fun. But that's not, I did have a small tangent for today. That wasn't it. But, you know, we'll put a pin in that because, like I said, I'm not, it's the one thing that has changed about the geography, for lack of a better word, of Manhattan that has not helped it at all.
Mm.
I will say that. And I'm sure that they're all, you know, they're probably more prevalent, you know, like in Midtown and not in, you know, I don't know, downtown or uptown, whatever. But I just, on my route from Grand Central Station to the Law and Crime Studio, it's literally every other storefront, every other one.
Wow.
But yeah, so that's a lot. That's a lot of pot. Okay.
So tangent one was surprise tangent. We have another tangent.
Yes, we do have another tangent.
Okay, so this is actually what you can refer to as a planned tangent, which means it's not really a tangent anymore, is it?
Wait a minute. Planned tangent.
Say that three times fast.
Exactly.
Would you call that a plangent? Maybe.
No. Please. Can we stop destroying the English language? The two of you.
You love when she makes up words like blorange.
That's right.
All right. So my plangent is an extension.
I can hear his eyes rolling. Sorry, go
ahead. I know.
They make a slight mechanical sound.
So it's an extension of what we talked about last week. And just to recap, or in case anybody wasn't tuned in, we informally started a segment that I am calling a PO'd SA, which is a PSA, but from the perspective of being PO'd about the thing that you're essaying about, if that makes sense. And last week we talked about a PSA, a PO'd SA about when you are taking a right-hand turn into, say, a driveway or an alleyway or even a roadway, it is 100% unnecessary for you to first veer out left before you take your right, right? That was one of the examples that
Yes.
So for this week's PO'd SA, I actually have to change the name. It's no longer, this segment should no longer be called a PO'd SA. This segment is going to be renamed, quote, justifiable homicide, end quote. Okay?
I was on pins and needles waiting for the new name, and I was not disappointed.
Okay, good. Now, let me set the stage. Okay.
I'm just seeing a book cover with that title and authored by John Spielberg Esquire. Gotta go away with murder.
Justifiable homicide.
That's right. And this is right before Jonna goes to Fox to talk to go on to the, what is the studio? The law studio?
Law and crime studio.
So, okay. So off air, we were talking about a person that we've mentioned on occasion, my much younger paramour, because he has some habits that annoy the crap out of me. And it just so happens that a few nights ago, I think we went out to dinner, we skipped dessert, and maybe that is what sparked this. I don't know. But it started out as, you know, we were hanging out watching a movie, and I wasn't really looking at him. I was looking at the TV screen when I start to hear this noise. And it wasn't a crunch like a chip being consumed, but it was crunch like, but not quite. I know this is, you know, you're like, what was it? And I look over and he's eating blueberries, and he managed to make the blueberries so noisy that I was like, are you sure there's something not wrong with those blueberries? Like, I've never heard blueberries make such a snap, you know, snap, crackle, and pop when being consumed before. And he just sort of ignored that and consumed the blueberries. Okay. So flash forward now, I fall asleep, he falls asleep. And as usual, I wake up at like 3 o'clock in the morning and I'm surprised that he too is awake at 3 o'clock in the morning. And so, you know, we're just, again, the TV's on, it's 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm used to being awake at that hour and he's not really used to being awake in that hour. So he says to me, you know, I'm hungry. So I say to him,
go pick something quiet.
I say, no, you're not. It's 3 o'clock in the morning. Just go back to sleep. You can be hungry, you know, in 4 or 5 hours. And so he shuts up for a minute. And then a couple minutes later, no, I'm really hungry. I'm going to, and here it is. So wait for it. He says, I'm going to quietly eat an apple.
This is, you swear to God, that's what he said to you?
I swear to God, if I'm lying, I'm dying.
Now, he didn't intend this apple that he was going to eat to actually be out of a jar that he could eat with a spoon, did he?
Right.
No, not the spoon.
He knew in advance his life was about to be in danger.
Not the sauce, right. I know. So I say to him, it is physically impossible to quietly eat an apple. Correct. But by the time the last apple was out of my mouth, he had already been downstairs, upstairs, back in bed, holding an apple. Now, 3 o'clock in the morning, I don't want to be awake. I have a thing with
mouth noises. We looked it up. It's a condition.
Exactly.
Misophobia. I have a thing with that as it is. It's 3 o'clock in the morning. So even though the TV was on, it was on a little bit low. There's no other sound around because it's 3 o'clock in the morning and I'm laying there. He proceeds to, quote, quietly, end quote, eat this apple 2 feet from my ear.
Boy, he's a brave man.
He is, really. I mean, sometimes, you know, Jonna, I live vicariously through this guy. You know that, right?
Oh, Frank and Barry.
In all your stories, I really do, because I'm like, you are one brave dude. Seriously.
Yeah, he really is. Now, I'm dying 1,000 deaths, and I'm trying not to be a total, right? So I say to myself, all right, let me calculate this. How long does it take to eat the average apple? And I'm going through my head, like, I've had plenty of apples in my day, right? It's going to take, like, what, about 90 seconds, right, to eat it? Like, how long does it really take to eat an apple? So I wait there, and I wait there, and he crunches some more. And I finally, and this is the truth. I probably shouldn't even admit this. I finally said to myself, okay, either I am going to murder him or I am going to go into the other room and wait an appreciable period of time until this rage that I am now feeling subsides. So I rightfully, to my credit, I got up. He said, where are you going? I said, I'm going to go pet some cats.
I was just going to say, I'm going to go save my sanity with a few cats.
I said, I'm going to go pet some cats if you want. When you are done quietly enjoying that apple, shoot me a text. Otherwise, you know where I'll be.
And you had this honestly. No. I know you tend to embellish a little. You two had this full-on conversation at 3 o'clock this morning.
Not only did we have this full-on conversation, but you are missing the very real point that I am genuinely proud of myself that I was able to calmly and coolly have such a conversation and did not take what was left at that very noisy apple and cram it up his nose at 3 o'clock in the morning.
I am proud of you.
Thank you.
Yeah, for Jonna, that definitely would be a moment of pride.
So now I have to ask you, which is why I've renamed this segment Justifiable Homicide. There must be, I am not alone. See, this is maybe a weird example of somebody wanting to quietly eat an apple in bed at 3 o'clock in the morning. Got to be something that you two could call up that and say, what would make a good story for this new segment entitled Justifiable Homicide? You got to have one. Come on. Oh,
I don't. Oh, I know. I know what Frankenberry's is. When we're doing a show and one of us keeps dropping out and then he has to go back and edit it like crazy.
That is a good one. Yeah, that's I could go with that. And actually, I did have a situation this morning where I was moving along in traffic on Route 84 and everybody's driving in line. Everybody's doing well. We were driving, all of us, way too fast. And then this young woman behind me decided, as you know, some young folks are going to do, and she got herself a little impatient, and she said, "I must gain a car length. I must gain a car length."
I know that.
So she passed me on the inside, almost cut me off to drive me off the road, and then pulled in front of me to, yes, indeed, grab that car length. Now, I wanted to find her at some other point in time and say, "No, you don't have to thank me. That bird I presented you with this morning is all yours." Okay, but
that's a stupid move.
Yeah, that could have been a justifiable homicide type move. Yeah,
mm-hmm. And either one, that's a POSA, a POSA, or a justifiable homicide. It could be one or the other.
What about you, Carol?
I know. I'll give it some thought. I don't have anything that gets me that wound up.
Oh, come on.
Hey, you know what did make me happy though? Is that there was someone driving fairly close behind me, and they got a chance to witness me presenting this young woman the bird.
Oh, okay. There you go.
I'm like, here, lesson learned. This is how you do it. Person behind me, watch and learn.
Now, can I ask you something about that, Frankenberry?
Yeah.
Okay. Because I often wonder this. I don't flip, believe it or not. I know you're not going to believe it. I don't know if I ever have flipped somebody off while driving. I have flipped people off, mind you, but usually not going 60 miles an hour. Did you make eye contact? Like, did she see you? Like, do you, like, it wasn't, was
well,
it
as
out
she,
there?
As she was pulling in front of me and almost cutting me off and I was hitting my brakes, I did do a hands up in the air, WTF kind of thing.
Oh, I do those all the time.
Yes.
I love those.
Yes, me too. I'm a big fan. And I did, I think, say stupid with, you know, a word that rhymes at the end with trucker. Yes. And something about mom.
Yeah.
I followed that with the bird. So it was a full routine. It wasn't just flipping her off, you know, because that's too easy.
Right. But you're not sure if she actually caught the punctuation, the bird flip. You're not quite sure she got that.
I don't. I'm going to assume that she at least caught the arms in the air WTF, though. Yes.
Now, I tell you what, people make some stupid moves on the road. Like, people are more aggressive than ever driving, I think.
Oh,
here
yeah.
I see it coming.
Here it is.
Oh, right. I'm always really slow on these. Okay, yep, go ahead.
Okay,
you've got
people are stressed out, they're dealing with burnout, then they get in the car and they do dumb things like that.
Exactly. Well done, Carol. Small hand claps.
I thought you were going to say that people get in the car and they do dumb things like donuts and burn out on parking spaces. But you didn't. But that's okay.
Yeah, you're stretching it now. Just introduce the damn guest.
It was good enough. Okay. So I am so looking forward to speaking with author and coach Emily Ballesteros, whose newest book is called The Cure for Burnout, when we come back.
All right. That sounds good. That is who we have on the way. So please stick around. It's Shauna Spilbore. It is Carol Pesci and myself, Just Frankenberry. And we'll be back with our guest. So please stick around.
Shauna and Carol on K104. It's Happy Hour.
Live better, laugh harder. It's Happy Hour with Shauna and Carol.
And welcome back, everyone, to Happy Hour with Shauna Spilbore and also Carol Pesci and myself. And it's time now to get to our guest. Now, we talked about the guest and what to expect earlier in segment one. And for anybody out there that may be suffering from burnout, I'm sorry, hold on. Put all your hands down. Okay, for everybody out there that's suffering from burnout, we have just the guest for you.
Oh, we absolutely do. And I am so excited to introduce our guest to you, because we were talking a little bit off air, and I feel like our guest today is the person who is about to pull the thorn out of my awe. Like, I'm loving her book. So without further ado, we have with us Emily Ballesteros. Let me tell you a little bit about her. Emily holds a master's degree in industrial organizational psychology, which I have never heard of, but I think I like it. And worked in corporate training and development before launching her burnout management business, you guys. In addition to being featured in media such as Time and the Wall Street Journal, she regularly provides burnout trainings for corporations like PepsiCo, Salesforce, and PayPal, among others. Her book, The Cure for Burnout, was just published in February by Penguin Random House. And today she's going to talk to us about what we can do to prevent, and if it's too late for you, like it's too late for me, manage burnout in today's busy world. Emily Ballesteros, welcome to the show. We are so happy to have you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to talk to you guys about burnout, yours or the world's.
I know. Well, thank you. So I got to say, and I had mentioned this, I am currently consuming the audio version of your book, which is how I consume my books. Mm-hmm. And I can just bring you all like into my bathroom. Mm-hmm. When I first started listening to it, I was like doing my hair, putting on my makeup, and I had to stop every 3 seconds because every word that you were in, because you narrated it, every word that you were speaking, I'm like, this woman has to get out of my head. How does she know that this is my life and this is what goes on with me? And I'm not even, I wish I were exaggerating. I'm not. So I really do think that you are going to cure my burnout. So let's talk about it. Why don't we start with what's burnout? Emily, huh? What is it?
So burnout, put simply, is prolonged exhaustion. A lot of people are familiar with having a hard day, but burnout is that extended period of time where you are compromising on your quality of life to the point where you kind of dread what you wake up to a lot of days because your life just feels kind of like a string of responsibilities. There are a variety of reasons that life can feel that way. I talk about like the three types of burnout and what can kind of cause them, but for simplicity's sake, it is prolonged exhaustion.
Okay, which is a good definition. Mm-hmm. But you really get into it in the book. Like one of the things that resonated with me, and I'm sure will resonate with other people, is kind of like that feeling of dread. Like we forget that when we wake up in the morning, we really should look forward to the things that we either have to do, we plan to experience, or what have you. And if you're going to try to prevent burnout to begin with, like I think a lot of your readers are going to be people who already have it. But like how do you do that? I mean, so you talk about the cure for burnout, but how can you prevent that from happening? Or is it more important to first cure it and then you can kind of move on to the prevention after that?
I think it depends on which end it finds you. Some people don't realize they're even on a path to burnout until they find themselves miserable and burned out. Like I found myself open to I was experiencing burnout by volume, which is one of the three types of burnout, because I was just shoving as many things as could possibly fit in my schedule into my schedule. And then I got to a point where I was very open to getting sick or getting in an accident because it meant I could get a break. And that was something's probably not right. Like this probably isn't great. So that was when I recognized it. But a lot of people, it takes getting to the point where they're like, I'm a really happy person usually, and I feel ready to rage quit, or I've got a really short temper with anybody who asks anything of me, or I'm, you know, avoiding people that I normally want to spend time with because I am so low on resources. And so sometimes it takes people being confronted with like something's not quite right and they don't know exactly what that thing is because it happened so slowly. But some people, they can prevent burnout. Maybe they've been burned out before. They know exactly what they do that gets them more burned out. Maybe it's a busy season. They know if they stop taking care of themselves or stop including certain things that overwhelm creeps up and they're a little bit less happy, but they can justify it for a little bit. So for some people, they can see it coming, and other people will just find themselves there, and then they have to mediate from there. See,
Emily, I have a question. I'm sorry, Jonna. Is burnout more prevalent today? And if so, why?
Yes, I would say that it looks different today, but it's prevalent in that everybody's kind of baseline of stress has risen. Since the pandemic, everybody feels there's just a greater sense of insecurity and vigilance and feeling like They, especially with the rise of social media and consuming information and seeing a lot of really hard, bad news that we can't necessarily see come full circle. We're seeing bad things and then we're not seeing resolution, or we don't feel like we have the power to create resolution. And so it feels like there's a lot of open-ended stressors in the world. And I mean, inflation, like there's so many things that go into general stress levels rising. And then on top of that general stress level rising, a lot of people in their personal lives are figuring out, what do I need to do to take care of myself? And sometimes including those things like finding time to work out or finding time to socialize or building a community, because it takes a village to raise kids, like doing those things can feel like fighting upstream. So burnout today looks different than it did historically, but a lot more people now that it's kind of a buzzword are being able to identify it and then recognize, you know, I would be less burned out if my life looked like this. And so thank goodness people can at least see that and then start to move towards whatever that this is.
Which is the key. You have a phrase, and it's actually, I think it's in the introduction of your book, where you call it the breakdown before the breakthrough. And I think that is so appropriate, right? Because people, you go on and you're suffering from stress, or maybe you don't know it's burnout, or you're not quite sure why you don't feel right. And then you get to this point where you're just like, you're going and going and going, and then you can't go anymore. And whether that's like in Frankenberry's case, flipping off the driver in front of him the other day, right? Or if it's my case, you know, deciding whether or not I wanted to murder my much younger significant other for eating an apple in bed.
Like at 3 o'clock in the morning.
At 3 o'clock in the morning. That was a very important fact. Yes.
Yeah.
And so we forget, I think, or maybe it's just me, that you don't have to be miserable, and you've got to like stop and then figure out how to move towards something that's going to make you feel better. And that's kind of what you guide readers through in your book.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even just those instances where you recognize, like, I wouldn't be as short-tempered about this if I had more resources to spare. But for some reason, like maybe it's a matter of volume of things you're including in your life, or maybe the people at work have been particularly difficult, so all of your resources have been going to them, or whatever it is, we notice in those moments when we are short-tempered, or where we're not quite reacting like we maybe think that we would or should, that it's like, okay, something probably needs to change, because this is not how I usually am and I don't want to be this way.
Yeah, I think people actually changed a lot post-COVID. Like, you know, I think collectively we sort of changed the way we think or the way we look at things. And I don't know whether it's because we were like, well, the end of the world's going to happen. This is not what I want to do for it. Can you touch on, because I really find this interesting too, you do describe burnout in three types, like burnout by volume, and then there's another two. Can you briefly talk to us about those different types of burnout?
Yeah. So burnout by volume is just including enough in your life that if anyone were popped into your life, it would feel like too much. It's just objectively a lot to try to fit into a day. And then there's social burnout. And this is common in especially people pleasers, but people who give away more resources to other people and their relationships than they really should. And they do not keep enough resources to spare for themselves. If they would rather be uncomfortable than make somebody else uncomfortable and not meet somebody else's needs. So a lot of times they're needs go unmet. And then there is burnout by boredom. And that is just kind of a disinterest or a disengagement from your life, feeling like you're kind of on autopilot and just going through the motions. Our brains need novelty and variety in order to really be engaged. We need some positive challenge. And so sometimes it's not like the situation is absolutely horrible. It's just that we've completely switched into autopilot in the situation. And over time, that leads to a lot of dissatisfaction, and it can lead to symptoms of burnout.
Wow. I never knew such a thing.
Yeah. Well, you know why you didn't know such a thing, Carol? Because you don't have five cats living under your bed. If you pay attention, like cats get bored easily, and it you can tell. Like, and you know, when you're a human and you're not being stimulated, I think it's the same kind of thing. But fortunately, yeah. Emily, so let's break this down for a minute. If somebody is suffering from burnout, and many people are, like, they don't have to think the cure is going to be so overwhelming that they shouldn't even bother, right? Like, it's manageable, isn't it?
Yes, definitely. I mean, when I was experiencing my own burnout and I looked at resources that wanted me to do extra work or make time for like an extra, you know, like yoga class or like to learn something that would take more from me, that was absolutely not what I needed. And so when I was building out the burnout management methodology, which looks at, so I cornered as many burned out people as I could find, asked them what it is they struggled with, what skills they felt like if they were better at them, they would have better work-life balance. And then talked to people with really strong work-life balance and asked them what skills it was that they thought helped them maintain that work-life balance. And those five areas that came up repeatedly are mindset, time management, stress management, boundaries, and personal care. And so when you strengthen these areas, and in the book, you walk through those areas and learn what you can just kind of easily and practically apply, then they help bolster you against burnout. And most people, when they hear those five areas, they can note really quickly, like, oh, it's boundaries for me. Like, I have a really hard time setting boundaries, and that's why I always end up working extra or like having to do things for other people. Or for some people, it's personal care. Like, they know that they don't take care of themselves. They're just like a vessel for performance. And they know that if they took better care of themselves, maybe if they had more stress management, then their quality of life would be better. And so it's learning these skills in combination so that you can just make changes where you are that don't take a bunch of extra effort from you.
Can you go in a little bit more to of the five pillars? What exactly do you mean by the pillar that you call mindset? Because that seems big to me. So what, can you break that down?
Definitely. Yeah. So mindset feels like a soft skill, but it is truly one of the hardest skills. And when I talk about mindset as it pertains to burnout, I'm talking about how you manage yourself. So the example that I give in the book, and just to kind of illustrate it, is there's two people and they go to the exact same spa day. And person A is thinking, this is so relaxing. I'm so glad I did this. This is a great use of my time and money. I'm going to see positive results in the future because I took the time to take care of myself, and they leave feeling relaxed. Person B, who gets the exact same treatment done the entire time they're in there, they're thinking, I have so much to do. This is not a good use of my time. I can hear my email pings from here. Like, this is like, I'm already missing things because I'm in here. And then they leave feeling very tense. And so person B has a lot higher chance of burning themselves out just with their mindset, just with the way that they manage themselves, because though their experiences were identical physically, but mentally they're going to get to the end of that day feeling very different. And so a lot of people that I work with are high achievers or people pleasers, and they operate, they manage themselves like person B. And so they can lead themselves to burnout a lot faster and a lot more harshly, because the way that they are inside of their head is a lot less peaceful and calm. And as a result, that leads to a lot of burnout.
That's such a good analogy.
It is an amazing analogy. Again, once again, Emily is in my head. So I want to drill down on this a little bit more, because that is what you just described perfectly. A lot of people are going to relate to, right? Not being able to enjoy the time that you're supposed to be enjoying for yourself. But yeah, if that, so we classify that as a mindset issue, how on earth do you, you know, turn that ship around? Like, how do you tell somebody you got to change your mind? Because somebody with that personality isn't going to be so easy to change, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, everything that the way that we are is learned. We've learned it over time. So it takes time to unlearn or to just correct yourself. And mindset is more difficult to correct because it takes a lot more honesty than something like time management. Somebody from an outside perspective could come in and say, if you prioritize these things in this way, you would get like things done faster. And people are like, oh, okay, whatever. Like, yes, I will take that feedback. And it doesn't feel quite as personal. Whereas mindset, if somebody hears you say something and then tries to correct your thinking, and you've always been that way, we get a lot more defensive. And so it takes a lot of vulnerability to correct something like mindset and admit, I could be thinking about this better, I could be doing this better. And then it takes actually thinking about it differently. Like, if somebody says something to you at work and it normally makes you defensive and you're used to being defensive, and somebody comes in and suggests, like, just don't take it as personally, it can feel like, well, now I'm going to double down. Actually, I'm going to take something personally against you now too. Like, it's a way of being. And so it's actually getting that feedback, or telling yourself that feedback and backing up and being like, okay, if I want different results, I have to do something different. And we're going to start with the this thought, and I'm actually not going to care that they said that and go on with my day. And that if this still matters to me in 48 hours, I can freak out about it then. And so it's like working around yourself when you can anticipate that you're going to respond the way you always have and that you would like to respond differently.
Emily, I feel like a big part of the issue today is we value ourselves, or we perceive our value by how much we do and how much we accomplish, not by how much we enjoy our lives.
Yeah.
And how do you crack that for somebody who think, I'll just, you know, more and more, get this done, achieve this, acquire this, then I'll be happy. And then, like, we all want the same thing. We all want to get to a place where we feel happy and content and peaceful and enjoying our lives. And we're miserable getting there. Yeah. How do we do that differently, or recognize it needs to be done differently?
I think that social media has played a big part in this. And the there's a lot of conversation around, like, we used to compete with the Joneses, which are your neighbors who are in the same tax bracket and live in the same kind of house and, you know, live approximately the same life. Back when there was no social media, you didn't know what you didn't know. And now we have so much visibility into, you know, it's not keeping up with the Joneses, it's keeping up with the Kardashians. It's to a lot of visibility into what we don't have and what we aren't doing. And then you get to the end of a really good day. What would be a good day for you? And you go online and you see somebody else, you know, like, went to the gym and you didn't maybe go to the gym. And so then it's like, oh, I should have done that. And so there's just these constant reminders of what we could or should be doing. We're seeing other people go on vacation. We're seeing other people buy houses. We're seeing these things that always make us feel unsatisfied. And so honestly, I would say that people who are not on media usually feel a lot more satisfaction with their life because they don't see what they're not, what they don't have. But it's also just knowing, like, and this is kind of the value piece, but knowing what your top values are, what makes a good life for you, and then just putting on blinders. And as long as you have the things that you want in your life, then being able to be satisfied with that and not kind of feeling like there should be more, I should be doing more. Finding out what, like, that simple, like, satisfaction looks like, and then being okay with sticking to that. Even if it doesn't look as bright and shiny and you don't have everything you're told you should want, you have what you know that you want.
Is that one of the, because you work with, you coach people, you go to major companies, as Jana read in your bio, and help people like with this. Is one of the very first things someone who feels burned out and is highly dissatisfied with the state of their life to sit down and say, well, what do I really want? Like, is that the first thing to say, what do I want my life to look like and feel like?
Yeah, that's a big piece of, I would say, just the overall kind of journey they go on when we're talking about burnout. Because like one of the examples that I give around values is I worked with somebody who was working in tech, and their value when they started that job working in tech in San Francisco was, I want to make a lot of money and I want to have a really cool job title so that everywhere I go, people like see me in my Patagonia vest and they say, wow. Oh, look at my status. Like, I've got money and status. They wanted that. And then their values changed and they really wanted freedom, and they wanted to have slow weekends where they didn't touch their laptop. Nobody needed anything from them. And so they were trying to figure out, can I stay in this job with this income I've become accustomed to and have this alternative, like this different lifestyle? And so it's a lot of times getting clear on, well, what are your values for the next period of your life? Which, if it's freedom, or if it's being able to be unreachable on weekends and have, you know, slow time after, before work, after work, and on weekends, what might need to change? And so then there's so much work to be done there, kind of bridging those gaps. But it really is just, what do you want for the next season? It doesn't have to be forever. You can go back to that crazy lifestyle. You already know what it looks like. It's there waiting for you. Work will always need to be done. But what do you want right now? And what does that look like? And a lot of times it's simpler than we think. Like, we're very simple creatures for the most part. Most people don't want a private jet. Like, they want to have the freedom to, you know, go to brunch with their friends on the weekend. So it's answering that, a lot of that question. Yeah. In the beginning,
the little things. Can I add my two cents? Because I think that this is so important for so many people, like, no matter what level of burnout you are, like, I do think you can be like burnout light or, you know, burnout big.
Yes.
But things are going to happen in life over and over again. So you might have a nice smooth period, right? You learn how to manage your burnout or to prevent your burnout. You have a nice smooth period, and then boom, something's going to happen that's going to disrupt all of that. And you're going to have to call upon the skills that you have acquired or learned to kind of wash, rinse, repeat to get you through whatever that next cycle is. So it's important you actually teach like the skills, and the book is a good starting place. I had never heard, you might be the only person, Emily, who I know that is a burnout manager, only because I could talk to you forever. I could burn you out talking to you.
Emily, she could. Yeah. or at least give you a run for your money, you know, with you being the expert and all.
But I am interested in like what a coach would do in this area. So can you give us just a little snippet about what the burnout management portion of your business, like how does that work exactly?
And then to her follow-up question is, Emily, how soon can she start working one-on-one with you?
Absolutely. When I started, I did a lot of one-on-one coaching, and I did that until my wait list was long enough that it didn't make sense to continue to deliver it in a one-on-one capacity. Because if people are burned out, I wanted them to be able to have a solution then, not, you know, in 8 weeks when I had another availability. And so transitioned to delivering the training in this group setting. And so what it looks like when I'm working with a group, because having done trainings done corporate training previously and been a part of these trainings and flown in trainers on different topics, you kind of see what the state of internal corporate training is. And so I already had a firm grasp there, and then I wanted to make it a little bit more fun. And so in these trainings, I'm just going back and forth with the audience a lot on like, this is the background on burnout. These are the signs of burnout. These are the types of burnout. These are like, you know, subtle signs of burnout you might not recognize, things like online shopping more often, like not getting back to texts and calls, letting laundry and dishes pile up, things like that. And so, and then I throw it back to them, and usually they are doing an implementation worksheet at the same time as we go through the training. So they'll interact with the material in between each section and kind of reflect on what we're talking about. So we walk through the methodology so that we're all working off the same information. And then from there, if I'm working with anybody one-on-one, then we're unpacking each of those areas further and figuring out what it is they tend to struggle with most, because it really usually is one of those areas. And in particular, boundaries. I feel like that's the biggest one that most people, once they get a really firm grasp on boundaries and don't feel guilty setting them, and they use them to protect the life that they want to live every day, then their life gets overall a lot easier.
I like that. That makes a lot of sense. Like if you could pick one to start with that.
For a lot of people, yeah.
I want to tell you something funny, and then I know I'll let you go, because I'm sure you have a million other things to do. But like I said, when I started listening to the book and you talked about shopping, like incessant shopping as being one of the symptoms of burnout, I'm like, well, okay, nailed that. But then as I got a little more into it, like one of the things is personal care. And lately I have been focusing on that, right, to kind of get myself out of the burnout. And I have this jacuzzi tub, and I've been bath salts, and I've been doing that like multiple times a week. But so I'm like, great, look at me, I'm doing self-care. Yeah. While I'm in the tub, I'm also online shopping. Boom! I'm like, no. Me. So I'm getting there, Emily, just baby steps.
Yeah.
Expensive baby steps. Yeah.
Yeah. It's all part of like I know I've seen conversations around a dopamine detox, but we're in this period in time where everybody's usually either working or seeking dopamine. And like we get easy dopamine from like eating sugars and from online shopping. We get that same rush from just like doing, like indulging in these quick, like easy treats, like little treat culture, because it feels like, well, if I'm not like, you know, taking care of responsibilities, I'm finally treating myself. And we're whiplashing between these two things when really life is actually supposed to be really boring and kind of slow. And the dopamine we get is supposed to be slow burning, not immediate. It's supposed to be like going on a walk with friends gives you dopamine, or like doing some kind of movement gives you dopamine, or working on a project over time gives you dopamine. Like we're supposed to be having these kind of slower dopamine experiences, but instead it's that boomerang.
which people can learn how to manage, beginning with getting your book, The Cure for Burnout, because again, I cannot say this enough. Like, we have been doing this, Emily, for like 12 years, and Carol and I and all of us have consumed a lot of books in self-development, et cetera. And certain books really resonate and, you know, others don't. Yours is, I just absolutely love it. And I really do feel like you've been following me around with the path. So if people do want to get a hold of you and buy the book, what is the, I mean, I got it on Amazon, obviously, but how can they connect with you, learn more about you, learn more about managing their burnout?
Yeah. So I am, the book is available, The Cure for Burnout, at most retailers. So you can just search it and get it from any of those. If you know that you will not sit there and read a book, get the audio version, put it on 1.5 speed and put it on in the background when you're getting ready or cooking or driving or whatever. And then I am on social medias. I'm on Instagram and TikTok, and my handle is Emily B. Ruth. EmilyBRuth. And I just post burnout content there. And then you can, my website is emilyballesteros.com, and it's linked on all of those platforms. So that is where I am. And if you're burned out, you've got this, we can do this together.
That is awesome.
Love it.
Yes. And you were awesome. Thank you so much. I'm loving the book, The Cure for Burnout. We've been speaking with Emily Ballesteros. Emily, you've been terrific. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yes, thank you very much, Emily, for taking the time to sit with all of us and deal with some silliness at the same time, but also to enlighten our audience. I'm sure they will search you out and get some further assistance. So thanks for that help. And we've got more happy hour still to come. Segment 3 is on the way with Jonna Spilbor and Carol Pesci and some dude. So please stick around.
Jonna and Carol on K104. It's happy hour.
Laugh more, stress less. It's happy hour with Jonna and Carol.
And welcome back one more time to happy hour here with Jonna Spilbor and Carol Pesci. Hello, ladies.
Hello, Frankenberry.
Very well done. Very well done. And thank you very much to Emily Ballesteros for joining us earlier and kind of walking folks through, walking our audience and Jonna and Carol through some assistance to burnout.
Well, the good news is you actually can help yourself. You actually can kind of fix your burnout. I know it doesn't feel like it when you're really deep into a burnout phase, if you will, but you can. And her book is so fun. First of all, she's fun, and I don't know how old she is at all, but I didn't look or do anything like that, but she looks like she's very young, but she's so damn smart. I'm like, oh, how can you be so young and so smart?
See, you're comparing yourself again, like she was talking about.
But it really is fun. Listen,
this is something we've talked about before. Like, where do you get the recognition that the change begins with you? Because I think people who are dissatisfied in life often feel hopeless. Like, I don't have a choice. These are just the things I have to do. This is just how my life is. I have these responsibilities. But she starts breaking it down to help you understand there's different contributing factors to burnout. Number one, that's a person, you know, like she says, what was it? Was it volume? Is that the one? It's just like
burnout by volume. Yeah.
Burnout by volume, right? And there's a number of ways you can get burnout. So when you start breaking it down and understand ways it can be happening to you, recognize that it is, doesn't mean you're weak. It's just a signal to you to start changing something in your life, because not only how much you enjoy your life matters, but your health matters too, if you get yourself to this point. And then she starts walking you through the different ways you can start reducing how much you're experiencing burnout. And I think what she's doing, her niche, her specialty, can help so many people and potentially even save lives by dropping that stress factor down.
Oh yeah. And it's a big, is this an oxymoron if we say big niche, right? Because
right, it kind of is. Yeah.
But it really is. And one little and listen, I am a student, not a teacher, in how to get through burnout. But I will say that sometimes, you know, like, your body heals itself. And there have been times where I've been that person at the spa that she described, like, you know, you're supposed to be there kind of relaxing and having a good time and getting away from it all for 45 minutes or an hour or whatever. But you're like, oh my God, I got to check my email. My texts are going on. I don't know what, and you can't really enjoy yourself. I have, and this is so simple. If you like tell yourself, whether it's going out to dinner or getting your hair done or whatever, if you say to yourself, okay, for this 1 hour, I am simply not going to care what is going on with the rest of the world. I'm just not going to care. I'm not going to pay attention to it. And you make that hour the only thing that you do care about. It actually is very freeing, even if it only gets you out of burnout for an hour. And it's so easy to do. It's just your mind. It's not even you have to change anything.
This is practicing presence. We've had many guests talk about this, that we can instantly improve the quality of our lives, our health, and our relationship by practicing being present in the moment you're in. When we get home, we're still stressed about work, what went on, what's going to happen tomorrow. When we get to work, we're thinking about what we got to do when we get home. But just to practice being in the moment fully will do so much for anybody.
Exactly. And then imagine having some of those moments and stringing them together, right? I'm going to spend an hour just doing my nails. I'm going to spend 7 minutes playing with the stray cats that are living under my bed. I'm going to spend 30 minutes not killing my significant other for eating an apple at 3 o'clock in the morning. String them all together. And before you know it, life is great.
Yep.
Exactly. And you're in the bathtub online shopping again.
One last thing. Since I've been doing this self-care in the tub, I just got my next water bill. It tripled.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, that'll stress you out and get you all burned out, and I want it.
From taking a bath a few times a week?
Well, I do find it weird, so I might have to investigate, but my water bill used to be really, really cheap, and my last water bill is $93.
Well, and how long has the much younger significant other been spending increased time there?
Nothing has changed, except I am taking my self-care bath. I don't know how much water it takes to fill a tub, because it's not like you fill it 10 times during one bath. You fill it, you take a bath, you get out, you know. So I don't know, maybe the neighbors have tapped into my water. Now I got something else to stress about. Thanks a lot.
Okay, cool. Now we'll look forward to seeing how you're doing next week. All right, listen. Thanks again to Emily Ballesteros for joining us today, and for Jonna Spillmore and Carol Pesci. I am Frankenberry. Thank you all for taking time out this morning to hang with us. Much appreciated. We'll be back again next week, same time, right here. So please come back then.
You've been listening to Happy Hour with Jonna Spillmore and Carol Pesci. More life advice, real conversation, and another awesome interview comes your way next Sunday at 7 a.m. to help you live better, stress less, and laugh more. Until then, catch this week's show and others at the Happy Hour link on K104Online.com.